just okay defense. That's really good defense. Now, the first 8 minutes we won't talk about. However, like, you locked in and you need to do what you need to do. Second half, 12 assists on 17 made shots. The ball was finding each other. They were finally playing Wisconsin basketball. 16-16 for the free throw line. They got there. And then the last part is John Tanjay taking over. 23 points, 6-11 from the floor, 3-6 from three, and most importantly, 8-8 from the free throw line. At times offensively in that first half when they were struggling, John was able to put his head down, get to the bucket, get to the free throw line, create some good things. I thought that calmed the rest of the offense group down.
They used their size to their advantage, too. A plus 17 on the glass, 38-21. 13 offensive rebounds, 10 offensive rebounds, beg your pardon, a 3 for Holy Cross, 13-3 in favor of Wisconsin's second chance points. Bigger team, and that
was one of the keys we talked about early on, is just dominate the glass. Use your strength, take advantage of it, and that's what they did.
All right, let's pause 10 seconds for station identification, 10 for an ID. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Wisconsin 85, Holy Cross 61. That's your final. When we continue, we'll check out the Nissan out-of-town scoreboard. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
A fourth-generation family-owned business is running strong thanks in part to Wisconsin cheese. Dufek Wood Products calls Denmark home and has been based in northeast Wisconsin for close to 120 years. It's best known for manufacturing boxes, which are food-safe to age and ship wheels of cheese and can be reused. But another Dufek Wood product is getting attention thanks to the Guinness Book of World Records. Do you think it's the family's wine boxes, organic garden mulch, or charcuterie boards? The answer coming up. Winter logging for summer building supplies is how the Dufek started. Manufacturing shifted by 1912 to other wood products, especially those cheese boxes. So did you guess which wood product is getting attention from the Guinness Book of World Records? It's the Dufek's charcuterie boards, with one recently named the largest ever, holding more than 760 pounds of gourmet cheese. That's one huge slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The National Crime Prevention Council.
Wisconsin defeats Holy Cross tonight, 85-61. Check the Nissan out-of-town scoreboard. Games earlier tonight, Iowa opening night win over Texas A&M Commerce, 89-67. Northwestern wins big over Lehigh, 90-46. Penn State 108, Binghamton 66, Maryland 79, Manhattan 49. Freshmen had a rather big night for the Terps tonight.
Just a quick 20-22, not a biggie. Yeah,
exactly. No big deal.
Now, do they have shooting around them? That's the question. Last year was they were not able to shoot the ball well from three. Still early on, but that's a good start to a career.
Yeah, not bad. Michigan State 81, Monmouth 57. Purdue, they were in a little bit of a fight, much like Wisconsin tonight, but the Boilermakers pulled away 90-73. Illinois leading big over Eastern Illinois with 4.5 minutes left. That's 100-62. 2.5 minutes left in Ann Arbor. Michigan 97, Cleveland State 49, and Nebraska. Again, that was close for a good chunk of the game.
Yeah.
Now they're up 13 over UT Rio Grande. Is it Rio Grande or Rio Grande? Rio Grande?
I think it's Rio Grande.
Okay, there you go. 78.
If you want to add the E, you can.
It depends. 78-65, Nebraska. Leading their opening night opponent.
Yes,
how about that? Texas A&M or Rio Grande.
UTRG. How about we go with
UTRG,
that?
UTRG. That'll work.
UTRG.
Yeah, that works. All right. There you have it. That is your Nissan out-of-town scoreboard. Wisconsin 85, Holy Cross 61. And we'll have more as our Wisconsin Ford Dealers postgame show continues. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
Looking for a fan favorite at your tailgate? Pork has you covered. Not only is it nutritious and delicious, but pork's got that flavor that your family expects. Firing up the grill? Try chops, brats, and ribs. Making appetizers or finger foods? Add bacon, ground, or shredded pork. Visit WPPA.org for recipe inspiration and to learn where you can source local pork. Wisconsin Pork Association is proud to support the Badgers and our farmers all year round. And you should too. Brought to you by Wisconsin's Pig Farmers.
At U.S. Bank, when they say they're in it with you, they mean it. Not just for the good stuff, the grand openings and celebrations, although those are pretty great, but for all the hard work it took to get there, the fine-tuning of goals, the managing of cash and workflows, and decision-making. They're in to help you through all of it, Because together they're proving day in and day out that there is nothing as powerful as the power of us. Visit usbank.com to get started today. Equal housing lender, member FDIC, copyright 2024 U.S. Bank.
It takes hard work to be the best in the game. Planning, commitment, resilience, sweat. That's why Old Dominion Freight Line, the number one national LTL carrier for quality, works hard to be the best in the game and is proud to support those striving to be the best in theirs. Old Dominion Freight Line, official freight carrier of Wisconsin Athletics, helping the world keep promises.
This is Ford Truck Month, with big offers on trucks that don't subscribe to the word impossible. Like the up-for-anything off-road ready Ranger, the adaptable Maverick, plus F-Series, America's best-selling trucks, featuring Ford F-150 and Ford Super Duty, the 2024 North American Truck of the Year. Built Ford tough trucks that see the impossible as a dare. And this is Ford Truck Month, with offers that make owning one possible. Get to your Wisconsin Ford dealer. Claim 1977 to 2023 CY total sales.
At Jones Dairy Farm, we've been making breakfast better since 1889 from our hometown of Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. We're a seventh-generation, family-owned and operated maker of all-natural breakfast sausage, dry-aged bacon, naturally smoked ham, Canadian bacon, and Braunschweiger. I'm Philip Jones, CEO and sixth generation Jones. And it's a family tradition to use only high quality ingredients and a signature spice blend that you can taste in every bite. Try Jones, a proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics. And go Badgers!
When it comes to women's sports, there's no place like UW. Our women set the standard for elite performance, from the volleyball court to the hockey rink. Every set, spike, and score pushes the boundaries of what's possible. UW Health mirrors this dedication to greatness. Our extraordinary team of doctors combines revolutionary research with compassionate care, setting the benchmark for healthcare across the country. So for the best care and the best athletics, it's easy. UW all the way. UW Health. Remarkable.
Our Wisconsin Ford Dealers postgame show continues as the Badgers take down Holy Cross tonight, 85-61. John Tanjay in his Badgers debut with 23 points. John Blackwell with 16. Nolan Winter ends up with 15. Not bad for someone who was listed as questionable. 7 points for Max Klusman. 7 points, 8 rebounds for Stephen Krause. 7 points, 4 assists for Kamari McGee. Carter Gilmore chipped in 5. Xavier Amos with 2 points tonight. And Isaac Gard hitting a triple from the left wing. His first career points as a Wisconsin Badger. Gabe Warren, he was terrific for Holy Cross tonight. 23 points, 9 of 3 shooting from the field, 4 of 7 from long range. On down the line, DeAndre Williams ends up with 11, 6 for, or 7 rather for Max Green, 6 apiece for Caleb Kenny before he went out with that injury in the second half. Khalil Singleton with 6, Tyler Boston with 3, Aiden Richard with 3, and Jaden Faroa ends up with 2 points tonight as Coach Gard makes his way here courtside. Wisconsin over Holy Cross tonight, 85-61. Up next will be Montana State on Thursday night, and then Appalachian State will come in here on Sunday for an 11 a.m. tip. But first things first, as the coach settles in, we'll get his thoughts here in this opening night win, 85-61. I want to start out, we'll kind of recap other things, but, you know, Butchie and I were, I don't know if we were impressed or disappointed at your coolness when Isaac hit the three right in front of you. I'm going, hey, come on, man. You're like Joe Cool over there. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
It is. It is. That was, I guess he's not gun shy. I know that. I mean, but he's been shooting well in practice and been hard to guard sometimes on the scout team. Gives John Tanjay fits, you know, running around, running off screens, and give him a crack at daylight. He lets it fly. So,
but you were in the corner trying to sell other people in, and you there was a little bit of a smile. But yeah. I was like, I gotta give you a lot of credit. You kept it together.
Yeah, like, yeah. Well, it's cool. What's really cool is watching his teammates react to him, and they all mobbed me too. There as he's, you know, it's. Like everybody else, he's no different in terms of the work he puts in. You know, he's in that weight room 4 days a week. He's running the hills. He doesn't get any special treatment. He knows, they know that.
Why gets harder than anything? Like, hey,
quite frankly, it does.
Go, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it does. I'm a little, I bark at him probably as much or more than anybody else.
That's right. He's son at home, but he's a player at practice, right? That's how it works. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'll ask this question then. You guys hold Holy Cross to 38 points over the last 32 minutes on the defensive end. We're not going to talk about the first 8 minutes.
Oh, we can talk about it if you want. It was only eight.
That.
It was only eight. It felt like it was about 12 or 15.
A little slow start defensively. What went wrong there? And then what adjustments did you guys make? I mean,
started guarding them. Started to get some. Cam McGee was really the difference maker. The boost he gives us defensively with ball pressure. I think we went smaller helped. You know, we lost Warren. Now Warren, I don't know if he's made four threes in his life. But for him, and he was labeled as a non-shooter, we're going to plug the paint and help on Kenny. We can, you know, we'll short close Warren. Well, he got loose twice in transition, and obviously that part of the scouting report went out the window. We labeled him as a shooter.
But that's part of the transfer portal. That's part of where you're at.
Like,
as much as you look at film, like early on in the season.
And you look at last year's stats, but if he's, any type of player is going to add something to his game. And I've told the guys all the time, like, if a kid doesn't shoot threes, he's probably worked on it in the offseason, or he should have. So, but credit to our guys to, you know, respond and bounce back. And, you know, I thought we did a better job, you know, the back half of the first half and then second half, much more who we need to be. We got a long ways to go, but who we need to be defensively. And I thought a lot of Tanjay did a good job of getting us to the free throw line. Nolan Winter, really, that second half's the post play he made, the run in transition to the rim. Obviously, you do little things like that, and then he feels confident shooting those threes. So, we'll break it down, but a pretty decent 30 minutes of the 40.
Yeah, it was. Go back to Tanjay, pretty good debut there. And I know it's a close scrimmage, an exhibition, and tonight, but his ability to get to the free throw line. And by the way, you guys 16-16. That's good to convert.
Yeah, I mean, that's the maturity coming out in him. That's when you're down whatever we were, 25-7 or 20, whatever it was, the maturity in him of not panicking, been there. You know, a younger player, a freshman, you know, things start creeping in their head. And him, he just stayed. He got more aggressive, actually. He really started attacking, and we racked the fouls up and got to the free throw line, which helped. So I told them, I said, if they're taking the ball out of the net and we're shooting free throws, it helps our transition defense. You know, it's not a deeply kept secret. Let's get back and get set versus jacking some stuff up at times and having them run out. But we did have some wide open looks. Klesmich forced one off a special play in the first half. But, I want them to stay confident, stay aggressive, and you can't start micromanaging.
But you talk about that the first half you only had three assists. Second half you've got 12 assists.
Well, we missed
assists.
A bunch of shots.
Well, you did.
That helps.
It does help.
Assists
right?
go up, Brian.
But it also seemed that like the second half they seem more comfortable too.
Yeah.
And it's going to have that.
Well, you get some defensive stops and you turn that into offense, and then it relaxes you a little bit, and you one feeds into the other. They are connected, and they are obviously both important, and I think they understand how important that defensive end is, because I think we have pieces that we can score and a system that we'll be able to score. Can we do enough and grow enough on the other end? And we got, like I said, we got a lot of growing to do, but a good response after that first 10 minutes or so.
Final thought, good to get this started, right? Training camp is probably seemingly forever for guys. And just now it comes fast and furious, but just good to get this thing rolling.
It is. It's, you know, as I've said many times, time to play outside competition. You learn more, by getting ourselves on film against opponents. Then in the first 15, 20 days are fine to practice, and there's a lot of implementation and small group work. But then you get to a point where it's diminishing returns a little bit. Mm-hmm. You got to go play in order to grow. You got to get tested in some areas, but we'll get better. We have gotten better. I think even in the course of this game, we got better. And they're not going to get easier, because Montana State, I think, is pretty good.
They're pretty good. Do you like that college basketball tips it off all on Monday? Because there is a whole slate.
Yeah, there is.
Do you like that, or do you wish it was more spread out?
No, I think it's good. I think we've always had something as a coaches association, and even our league, we've talked about how do we – Major League Baseball makes a big deal of opening day, right? obviously the NFL does, the NBA, all that college basketball, we're kind of caught in between. You know, the World Series just ended, college football is going, the NBA has started, we're kind of, how do you make a splash right out of the gate? It's hard because there's a lot of seasons and sports that are deeper in specifically college basketball or college football, and the NFL is off and rolling, so it's hard to really grab the attention of the nation, so to speak. And that's what you get to those MTEs, you know, later in the month. That's what the intent of those is, or those are. That'll put more light on college basketball.
Wait, one of those teams playing in that MTE that you're going to be Texas A&M tonight. So it's just kind of welcome to it. We're underway in Central Florida. Yeah. So, yeah, good to get it going. Fun to see. Hey, congrats again on your win, and good to see IG get in the scoring column. That was fun.
Yeah, deserved
it.
Sure, that'll go in a scrapbook somewhere.
I would think so. Take care. We'll talk
soon. All
right,
thanks, guys.
Badgers head coach Greg Gard is joining us here tonight as Wisconsin defeats Holy Cross 85-61. Need to take one more break here? Yep, we'll take one more break back to wrap it up in 1 minute. This is Badger basketball from Learfield.
Did you know that 9 out of 10 Americans are sick of the divisions in our country? But there's one small step we can take to remember that we're still connected. All over America, strangers with different political views are coming together to talk about their lives, not politics, and discovering they actually have a lot in common. Because even if we don't see eye to eye, we can still talk heart to heart. So let's talk for a change. Learn more at takeonesmallstep.org.
Teachers are dynamic leaders shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. They're skilled experts, discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, leading by example. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Wisconsin 85, Holy Cross 61. Opening night in the books for the Badgers. Game 2, we just talked about it. Montana State, good team, tournament team. Each of the last 3 years, they got hot. They got in by virtue of winning their conference tournament, the Big Sky Conference. But it's been a good, solid program. And it does ramp up here. And so it's off and running, man. Let's go.
It is. You got a game Thursday, game Sunday. Get ready to go.
Yeah, that's the way it is. It's just that, the training camp's too long. So get this going. Already an interesting night in college basketball. We get it going. So now the fun really begins. So.
Now, looking forward to it. I'll be able to watch or listen, little Ohio State-Texas game. This is what it is. It was interesting to hear Coach say talk about that and should you do something different. But I love it all in one night. This starts. You're going to play. There's a bunch of games going on. There's a bunch of excitement around it. College basketball always delivers.
Just pay attention to it.
That's it.
There's a lot of fun stuff that goes on before March. We get March. We understand March. We love it. A lot of good stuff happens before that. So jump on board. Well, hopefully you'll be out here to join us on Thursday when the Badgers take on Montana State. Final again tonight, Wisconsin 85, Holy Cross 61. This broadcast is a copyrighted presentation of Badger Sports Properties, a property of Learfield, under the broadcasting rights granted by the University of Wisconsin. Rebroadcast or reuse of this presentation is prohibited without the express written consent of the University of Wisconsin and Badger Sports Properties. The announcers are employed by the Badger Network with the approval of the University of Wisconsin. The general manager of Badger Sports Properties, who will be buying us lots of dinners on the show this year, is Scott Silvestri. For Brian Butch, our engineer, Dave McCann, and Alex Brown back at our network studio, this is Matt LePay, hoping you'll join us on Thursday night when the Badgers take on Montana State. Thanks for listening. This is the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Badger basketball has been brought to you by Alliant Energy. Alliant Energy is powering beyond for you. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison and Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin Dells. Proud casino partners of Wisconsin Athletics. And by Fabic Rents. For all your equipment rental needs throughout Badgerland. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Badger Sports Network.
I've been following you guys on social media. You and the van are just about everywhere. Are these things that you're talking about? Are your members getting this? Does there seem to be a light bulb, like an epiphany moment that you get?
Yeah, you know what, Rick? The one thing that for certain is different this time around is 2020, we were dealing with the pandemic. And having longer conversations with our members wasn't easy. Trying to reach them virtually, trying to reach them, you know, digitally was difficult. And spending the time on job sites, being able to talk to our members, you are able to have a much longer conversation. And that's what's needed when there's nothing but 30-second sound bites out there about inflation, immigration. You know, those are the things that Donald Trump has masterfully used to divide the working class. And, you know, you do need more time to talk to your members. And we've been having nothing but positive dialogue with our members. And obviously, look, not everybody is able to be flipped. However, when given the opportunity to really explain the issues going into this election, you can certainly see the shift. And you can see the momentum shifting once you have that opportunity.
Because, look, I believe it's going to be the union members who are going to drive this election. Because, you know, economically, I think they're the ones who do shift a little bit back and forth and make some of the swing votes. So for me, this moment is important to get them on board, especially when you look at the information that is out there. This Project 2025, this is scary stuff. Now, me sitting in this chair, none of the stuff that's in that document is surprising. This is stuff that every one of these right-wing think tanks have been dreaming about for years. It's what they've been whispering to each other. They finally found someone who's dumb enough to put it down on paper and say that's their blueprint. And look, I think Tim Walz is right. You don't make up a playbook if you're not going to use it. I fear what's in there, if Trump gets a chance, that becomes our future.
There's no doubt. There is no doubt. When somebody tells you who they are, you got to believe them, right? And then more to the point, they've been trying these different things now for the course of the last 50 years. You know, this was an entire package and playbook of things that they have tried intermittently now over the course of our lifetimes. And that doesn't mean, you know, that they're going to stop just because, you know, Donald Trump says he didn't support Project 2025. I mean, look around him. Everybody he has surrounded himself with believes wholeheartedly in that agenda. And there is no doubt that that is going to be the playbook for the federal government going forward.
Yeah. Now, you said something earlier about project labor agreements, and we talk quite often on the program about prevailing wage and things that are specific to the building trades that most voters don't know anything about, that most people don't really care about or think it affects them or benefits them in any way. I argue that it does benefit them. Project labor agreements, I think, are a good way to spend tax dollars to ensure that the projects that we do are done in a more efficient way, with good wages for everyone. Walk me through why you think both of those things are good for, you know, someone who's never going to benefit from it. You know, why, you know, the cashier at the local supermarket or the shopkeep on Main Street, why do those two things matter to anyone besides your members?
Well, it should matter to all, because, I mean, look, first off, the statistics have shown that a federal government or a state and local government that invests in prevailing wages and project labor agreements, you know, there is zero difference in whether or not, you know, the job is performed on time and under budget. So there you can start right off the bat. You're going to get the best, most highly qualified, skilled workforce in the world when it comes to construction. But put that aside, the economic comeback and what comes back to communities under project labor agreements and in jobs that are paying local area standard Davis-Bacon rates, it's tenfold. When workers have more to spend at their local grocery store, when workers have more to spend at the local, you know, economy, the restaurants, the retail stores, everybody does better. It's truly a high road economic model that, quite frankly, lifts up all communities. And that's what you should want as a taxpayer. Look, we all got to pay our taxes. Don't you want your taxes to come back to you in the form of having consumers that can spend more, having consumers that have more disposable income? I mean, that just makes sense. On top of it, knowing that the most highly productive skilled workforce is going to be working on those projects.
Yeah. And local. I mean, one of the things I said, you know, on Friday was that, you know, I want a local building trades. I want the guy who's putting the roof on my kid's school to have a kid in that school too. and be in my neighborhood so that he's going to do a darn good job to make sure it doesn't fall in, as opposed to some transient who's going to come through, some fly-by-night who's going to do a half-you-know-what job and never be seen again. I just think it's smart policy. I think it's a sound investment. I think it's good for not just the workers, but as you pointed out, the communities as well.
Yeah, it's a proven process that has worked now for a long time. And there's the only people that are against project labor agreements are the folks that work in the construction industry that don't want to pay the higher wages and higher benefits. I mean, let's just be honest.
Our ABC contractors.
ABC contractors, the Chamber of Commerce, the folks that, you know, want to do the best that they can to profit off of the backs of the working people in this country. They're the only ones against project labor agreements.
Yeah, I look at the Tale of Two Bridges. It's always my favorite example. You got that bridge out in California that's probably never going to ever be done, or the replacement to the Tappan Zee. One was done with a project labor agreement with prevailing wage, done on time, under budget, and the other one, well, not.
Yep. Still waiting, right? I mean, that's the reality of how and how important it is to have a federal government that understands that too.
Yeah, it's not always the cheapest price wins. It's the best price and the best workers. So let me ask you, you're wrapping up your final day in your neck of the woods in Philly. As everyone knows, Pennsylvania is going to be the decider, I think, in this election. And Philadelphia is going to be a big part of this. What do you experience? I know on Sunday you were at a rally with Bob Casey. I know you've been doing a lot of stuff there. What's the atmosphere?
I mean, look, like you said, everything is pointing to Pennsylvania being the deciding state in this election. There's no pathway for Vice President Harris to the presidency if she loses Pennsylvania. It's going to be very, very difficult, put it that way. And then, you know, most people know that in the state of Pennsylvania, if you don't win Philadelphia and the surrounding counties by a huge majority, you're going to struggle winning statewide. And what I am so impressed with and what I am proud to be a part of is that I've seen the most, what I believe to be best ground game developed by the labor movement direct to our members. I mean, we had hit canvas after canvas after canvas. I believe it was almost 1.5 million doors hit between the labor movement, Kamala Harris for president, and the Democratic Party just on Saturday alone in the state of Pennsylvania. Everywhere I go, people are out canvassing, people are knocking doors, talking to their neighbors, talking to their coworkers. And I think that's going to be the difference to win this election that is going to be close, you know. And I personally am going to stay through election day tomorrow, make sure I stay in Pennsylvania so that, you know, I get to cast my ballot here in Bucks County, Pennsylvania for the next President of the United States, Kamala Harris.
Well, it sounds like you got a plan. Let's make sure you get to it. But obviously tomorrow the big push is going to be just getting people to the polls and yep. making sure that they get to cast their ballots. Any advice for people who, you know, if they go to the polls and their name isn't on the list or they're being challenged, any advice on that front?
Yeah, I mean, look, people make such a big deal about Election Day voting fraud. And the truth is our elections are very secure. I mean, we've seen it in the last election. You know, there are people there to walk you through at every single polling place that I'm aware of here where I grew up and where I worked the polls. And you know, these are good people that are there to help you through the process, that will talk you through the process. My only advice is don't walk away. You know, ask the questions. Make sure you talk to those poll monitors. Talk to them the right way. And these are people that are out there to make sure our election's safe and secure.
Yeah, if nothing, get a provisional ballot and at least make sure that you get something in. So last question. Thoughts? How what are we looking for on election night? Do we think it'll be called on election night? Do we see a protracted counting? And how do you think the House and the Senate are going to fare overall?
So, I mean, I'm not in the art of predicting, right? Because that never seems to work for me as a betting man. I always seem to regret it the next day. Here's what I think I know to be true, Rick. I don't think we're going to know the final outcome of this election for quite some time. I don't believe we're going to have anything other than insight Tuesday night and into early Wednesday morning. You know, there's things like in the state of Pennsylvania, they can't even handle the mail-in ballots and start processing them until after 7 o'clock, right? Tomorrow. So I think it's going to be a slow process. I do fear that Donald Trump is going to pull the same, you know, stunt that he pulled in 2020 by trying to claim an early lead and an early victory. And I think that people need to be patient. I think we're going to see a very, very good day. And I think women are going to be the ones that put this thing over the top for Vice President Harris. I do believe that in my heart of hearts. I do believe the House is within grasp. And I think we're going to have some very close Senate races that have been written off. I do believe that Texas is going to be much tighter than some people may have thought. And I think that could be the surprise of the night. And I think there could be some other surprises within there. But really, the answer is be patient. It could take us. I remember Saturday. It was Saturday after Election Day when they finally called the state of Pennsylvania for Joe Biden. And Joe Biden won by a pretty nice margin in the state of Pennsylvania. So just be patient. It's going to be a long couple days.
I'm hoping that everybody gets out. I'm hoping this is a well-decided election, clear cut and dry, so we don't have these kind of months of deniers or angry and courts and all this stuff. I hope we make an actual decision. But Jimmy, I appreciate you taking some time. Great work on this election thus far. I look forward to the results tomorrow. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me, too.
Jimmy Williams, Jr., General President of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. I want to hear your thoughts. What are we expecting on Election Day? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
St. Joseph's Indian School is much more than a school for Native American children.
It's like a family. Classes are fun here.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy sky tonight with showers pushing back into the area later on. Temps fall into the 40s tonight and stay there for tomorrow, with clouds and on and off periods of rain. Clearing out for Wednesday, highs in the upper 40s. And with sunshine Thursday, highs warm to near 50. Right now it's 48.
A fourth-generation family-owned business is running strong thanks in part to Wisconsin cheese. Dufek Wood Products calls Denmark home and has been based in northeast Wisconsin for close to 120 years. It's best known for manufacturing boxes, which are food-safe to age and ship wheels of cheese and can be reused. But another Dufek Wood product is getting attention thanks to the Guinness Book of World Records. Do you think it's the family's wine boxes, organic garden mulch, or charcuterie boards? The answer coming up. Winter.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as we've been talking about, the nation's eyes are going to be on Pennsylvania Tuesday and, well, Philadelphia. That's where the... If you know Pennsylvania politics, as Philly goes in these elections, the state goes, you get a good turnout in Philly, you get a lot of people energized, engaged, and out to cast their ballots. You get a big turnout. Democrats do well in Pennsylvania. In fact, if you remember 2010, you had Tom Corbett said, you know, if we could just hold down the vote in Philly, we'll do all right. And he knew what he was talking about. As long as they can suppress the vote there, maybe Republicans have a chance. And here to share some thoughts on what the atmosphere is in Philly. I know over the weekend had some big rallies, had some events going on, lots of door knocking, lots of get out the vote activity. That's why I've asked Richard Hooker to come talk with us. Richard is the Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 623 there in Philly. Teamsters Local 623.org, the website. Richard, how are you, buddy?
Good, brother. Thanks for having me on the show.
So, what's it look like?
I believe we're going to win. We're going to get her across the finish line. When I mean her, I mean Kamala Harris. I think we're going to get her to that point where she needs to be. And like you said earlier, it's going to come through Philly. We're going to turn the numbers up here. We are. We've been knocking hundreds of thousands of doors here. Not just, you know, Teamsters, but, I mean, all kind of unions unite here, SEIU, AFL-CIO, we've been really, really putting the boots on the ground.
Now, I remember talking to a number of labor leaders at the international level back in 2016 who were in Philadelphia knocking on doors, talking to union members, and they came back with the kind of uh-oh kind of gut feeling. Are you feeling that this time around?
No, I feel like the folks that we've talked to, they realize that democracy is really at stake here. And you can like Trump, don't like Trump, whatever, but he is a threat to democracy. And America is a lot of things. You know, we may be this, that, or the other, but the one thing I do realize is that America, we do love democracy, the freedom to love who we want, worship who we want, go where we want. And this guy is a threat to all of that. And so regardless of you know, your party, I think people really understand, especially after January the 6th. And I think people understand that. The folks that we talk to, they understand that, hey, man, you know, I may not like a lot of the policies and stuff from Kamala, but when it comes to democracy, there's really only one candidate.
So let me ask you this then, because, you know, as a Teamster, you know that the International Union, Sean O'Brien and the executive board failed to endorse in the presidential election. And their claim was is because, well, Trump won so many union households in their poll. I guess the first part, they claim that Biden won. When Biden dropped out, they then did, what was it, a phone poll or something? And they then said it was a landslide. Trump won by like, 60, 70%?
Yeah, it was. I believe throughout the QR code that you're speaking of in the phone poll, I believe he got about 67% of the vote. But what they didn't mention to tell folks was that only around 3% of the entire membership, and that's 1.3 members, voted in all three of their polls. So that's not really indicative of overwhelmingly everybody want Trump.
Yeah.
No, that's not the case. And here in Pennsylvania, especially in Philadelphia, in my membership, it was overwhelming support for Kamala Harris. So, I mean, the polling is whatever. And I think we're going to see what happens on Tuesday, that those polls don't really, indicate where the Teamsters want to go and want to be, the rank and file, I should say. And to what he did, I think it was an injustice to the entire labor movement because – in something like this, every labor organization has to be together. You have to be.
Yeah, the idea of unity, the idea of solidarity, all of that stuff. And and I guess I'll bring this up since you've opened this door. You know, I saw O'Brien on a right-wing podcast with a shirt that says Teamsters versus everybody. And I think that's a horrible frame. I think it's stupid. In fact, I've told him point blank, I think it's stupid. And I hope that isn't how he truly feels, because we need to be part of the greater labor movement.
I agree. And I don't agree with that either. I think the collective is the way to fight capitalism, right? You can't do it with just a group, group over here, group over there. We all have to be moving in the same direction.
And the reason I think this is important, Richard, is look, Pennsylvania is the keystone of this election.
Yeah.
There's no question of that. There's no pundit who doesn't believe that. There's no commentator who doesn't understand that. Pennsylvania is the state. The Teamsters represent a lot of workers in this state. So to have the kind of mixed message that the International is sending to your members and to the members across the state, I think is dangerous. And I fear, and this is where my fear is on Tuesday, that kind of mixed message helps Donald Trump win this state and ultimately become president in 2025.
Well, you're right. The messaging has been very confusing. And we have spent a lot of time with our members having to explain to them, hey, listen, we know what the general president did. Stop focusing on that. We're here to talk about what your employer will do. And that's really what this is all about. What your employer will do to you.
Yeah.
If you don't have the right to strike, the right to have collective bargaining, the right to have due process in your contracts, agreements procedure. That's what this is about. O'Brien does O'Brien things, right? Whatever. We have to focus on the here and now. You see your manager every day. What you think your manager wants to do? And that's where we go when we talk to our members about what happened at the IBT and what needs to happen on November the 5th.
Yeah, ultimately, which side are you on in this moment? But, you brought up, the right to strike. I think that should be the giant red line that any politician who dare say that it's okay to fire striking workers should never get a union vote ever. And yet you had Donald Trump and Elon Musk waxing poetic about doing just that.
I know, and I'm with you. When I heard that, I thought, and this is just me, I thought that the general president was going to come out and say, hey, that's it. Enough is enough. Kamala Harris. I did. That didn't happen.
That would have been leadership.
Yes, because at that point, to your point, what is there left to talk about? If we can't strike our employer, you're not going to get what your demands met. It's not going to happen. That's our strongest and most valuable weapon, to withhold our labor. When you can't do that, the employers are just going to walk over you.
It's really your only power, Richard. The only power workers truly have is the right to put their hands in their pockets and walk. That's it. You have no other power in the workplace. And in fact, Pennsylvania's workers' compensation law still refers to the employer-employee relationship as master and servant. So that's the situation. If you don't have that ability to strike in this country, then you have, as you've pointed out, nothing. And to have a presidential candidate praise someone for doing that should be one of those. Look, Donald Trump, so much of what he does should have been the end of him. But for me, that really is the mortal sin.
I agree. To me, in labor, nothing is more sacred than the picket line. Nothing. And so when you desecrate that by saying all those folks who made that determination that they had enough and we're going to do what we need to do to get out with the demands met, and you think it's funny, because that decision, it doesn't come lightly, right? There's some conversations that you got to have with your family. Hey, money's going to be tight, may not be working, but you have decided to tell your employer enough is enough. Yeah. And like you said, when a presidential candidate says that sacrifice should be punished, they should be disqualified from any union endorsement.
See, for me, that's the, you know, I just carry that around on a tape recorder going, you're in a union? Did you hear this? That should be it. That should be the end of it. And I think back to my grandfather, who was a lifelong union member, fought, battles back in the 50s and, fighting for union rights in the 60s. And, this stuff would have been the end of someone. And I remember when I moved in with my grandparents, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but when my mother passed, I moved in with my grandparents, and my grandfather said, you don't go across the street and you don't play with that guy's grandkids or any, you don't go anywhere near that house. And I didn't ask why for about 10 years. And I said, what was that all about? Evidently, the guy crossed a railroad picket like 40 years beforehand. And nobody talked to him. He was completely ostracized from virtually everyone because of that transgression, because that's how that generation built the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity, by having that kind of solidarity and that kind of response to people breaking that.
And we need to bring that back, brother. We need to bring that back. We can't endorse candidates or withhold our endorsement of pro-labor candidates when we know we have someone who believes in crossing picket lines and believes that you should be fired for going on strike. Yeah. We can't have that.
Now, I got to get your thoughts on this. I was watching one of your Facebook posts, and I don't speak Spanish, but you had one of your members talking about the Puerto Rico joke or comment. And I look at this most recent Univision YouGov poll that shows that 69% of the people who responded thought the comments defining Puerto Rico as a floating island of garbage were more racist than humorous. 17% thought the comments were intended as a joke rather than serious remarks. 71% felt that, well, it is who Trump is. It's the racism in their campaign. And now you've got 64% of Latino voters leaning towards Harris. Are we surprised it's only 64%? And what kind of message did that comment give you as you're out there talking to people? Because Pennsylvania has a very large Puerto Rican population, which hopefully could swing the election. Any thoughts?
Well, Trump has always been a racist person. Just put that out there. So when a person comes to one of his rallies and say that, That's because he creates that atmosphere for them to feel comfortable in doing that. And when I walked into work that day, my shop steward came to me and she was upset and she wanted to do that video and let her, her fellow Puerto Rican and Latino people know they need to vote for Kamala Harris, which she did. And even though I understand the people say, oh, this is Trump, but that doesn't give him a pass. He's wrong. He's racist. And again, when you don't endorse the other candidate, it says a lot about you. It says a lot about you.
Yeah. No, I mean, very clearly. And as I've said, look, if Trump does win, I will begin every broadcast in with, this is what Donald Trump did today, the horrible that he has done. And thank you, Sean O'Brien, for making that possible. Because, look, I truly believe if Pennsylvania goes to Trump, it will be because of O'Brien.
I hope not, because I just hope not. Because I really don't know what the thinking was behind the non-endorsement or the tacit endorsement, I should say, for Donald Trump. I don't get it. I don't understand, because he has never demonstrated that he was on the side of working people. Never. So why would the most powerful union in the land not endorse Kamala Harris, who gave the deciding vote to save pensions, in which the general president's pension got a lot of money from that pension plan being saved? I just don't understand it.
I don't either. And look, all the other stuff that goes. Now, Richard, on Sunday, the Teamsters held a rally for Amazon workers with Bob Casey. And it was a Casey rally, and the hope is that Bob Casey gets reelected. I think Bob Casey's a good man. But you have this big rally for Amazon, which is great. I love the fact that they're organizing Amazon. Sean O'Brien calls me tomorrow and says, hey, I need your help. I'm going to help him. But if Donald Trump becomes president, all that ends because the joint employer rule goes away, the CMEX decision goes away, we end up seeing the return to corporate rule at the National Labor Relations Board, which is all bad for the organizing victories that we've come to be very proud of here recently. I think it all dies.
I agree. And that's why, again, I don't understand why we don't support a candidate who has told us, shown us, that they want to strengthen the PRO Act, pass the PRO Act, I should say, and make it easier for workers to organize and not appoint pro-corporate people to the NLRB. I don't understand, because to your point, what happens if Trump wins? All that Amazon organizing and stuff, that goes out the window. It's over with. No. So why not support Kamala, who has told everybody that, hey, we're going to pass the PRO Act and make it easier for workers to join a union? I just don't get it.
The only way the PRO Act passes is if we get 60 senators, and I don't see that happening for a while. So for me, it's about using the levers of power that you have right now. And the National Labor Relations Board, the Department of Labor, Federal Trade Commission, the Department of Justice, there's a lot of levers that we can use today to make lives better. And I say I want someone who's going to put those levers in the right place. And Donald Trump has shown us he is not that guy.
He's not, and he's never going to be. And hopefully come Wednesday morning, we'll wake up and democracy is saved. We'll still have the right to strike. Women still have freedom. We'll still have the right to collectively bargain. And those levers that you're talking about will still be able to be used for workers. So again, I don't know why we didn't endorse Kamala. I'll just say that.
I'm with you. I got to get your thoughts on this. I don't know if you've seen this story or not, but evidently, have you seen the Donald Trump's Truth Social company outsource jobs to Mexico?
No, I didn't see. Wow.
Now remember, this is a guy who's on the campaign trail railing against people outsourcing jobs. And he's threatening heavy tariffs, and he's making all of this political noise. I don't believe for a second he's going to put tariffs on everything. I think it would be stupid to do on everything. I believe in tariffs if we use them strategically, but broad stroke anything I'm opposed to. But this idea that we're going to tariff everything, and yet he's doing what he claims he wants to stop. I just think this is one of those, this is who he is. Why don't we believe him?
Brother, if I had to answer to that, I'll be a billionaire. But he,
and maybe
he,
you'd get a tax break.
Right. But he has continued to show us who he is. He's not going to change. Nobody's really forcing him to change. And that's the problem. He continues to be this way because for whatever reason, people support him. And until that changes, until people wake up, we're always going to have this Donald Trump syndrome, I should say. Because once he, hopefully he goes away, yeah, there's going to be somebody else that comes up behind him.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is the thing that's really troubling to me. You know, and I said it earlier, you know, my grandfather had a saying, if a rich guy is going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. So when I see people like Elon Musk running around spending millions and millions of dollars, when I see all these billionaires spending millions of dollars to get Trump elected and doing it in a most, you know, out fashion, it's kind of not one of those which side are you on things, something that my grandfather would have viscerally been repelled from, and regardless if he agreed with him or not, would have voted against him just because of the moneyed interests putting so much into this guy, because they're getting something out of it.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious your thought. I mean, is this something that, or is this too, is this too far of an explanation, too far of a point to make? Because I think it's just, it's, I think it's a visceral thing where you've got billionaires who are doing so well in this economy when you've got working people who are struggling and you've got people fighting, not wanting to pay taxes, or it's crazy to me.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I believe they are going to get something out of this. That's why they're spending so much money, because they believe that once he gets in, of course, the corporate tax cuts and all these many things are going to keep coming their way. Wow, they're going to continue to put the squeeze on the working class. That's what's going to happen. And again, we have to wake up and make sure we get to the polls tomorrow and show up. We have to. If not, then corporate greed will reign supreme. And the working class is going to be, you know, under their domain. And we have to fight back.
Richard Hooker, I appreciate the time. Always great talking to you, my friend.
Same here. Thank you.
Our good friend Richard Hooker, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 623. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Too far on the O'Brien thing. I've been getting beat up from some of my Teamster friends that I talk too much about it. I got to tell you, I think it is that big of a deal. I think his miscalculation, his failure is a big deal. Keep the emails coming. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1916. That was the day when what came to be known as the Everett Massacre took place in Washington State. The Everett Shingle Workers Union had gone out on strike in May. Organizers from the industrial workers of the world came to the area to support the strike and to make a stand for free speech. Over the summer, tensions began to mount. The police began to arrest IWW speechmakers. Then, in August, violence erupted between strikebreakers and picketers at the Jameson Mill. The IWW decided to bring in a group of about 300 members for a free speech rally. They came from Seattle by two steamer boats. But the first boat was met at the docks by the sheriff and a large group of armed deputies. A gun battle broke out. One passenger, Ernest Nordstrom, told the harrowing tale of what happened to the Seattle Union Record, saying, quote, "I couldn't swear where the first shot came from, but as it comes to me, I thought the first shot was a warning shot not to go ashore. After that, there were shots, gee whiz, all kinds of shots. And when they commenced, all ran to the other side and the boat began to tip. The passengers avoided capsizing the boat and turned around to flee back to Seattle. At least five IWW members on board were killed, along with two of the deputies. After the violence, the Shingle Workers Union called off their strike. 74 IWW members were arrested, but only one stood trial. None were convicted. Ernest Nordstrom followed up with, "I'm sure there is no excuse for this whatsoever. There need have been no bloodshed." For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So this is the closing argument, if you will, for tomorrow's election. I hope everyone's registered. I hope everyone gets out to vote. Look, ultimately, what I want to see, I want to see the country make a decision. I want us to decide which path we're going to follow. And they're very clear. To me, in this moment, it's very clear the directions each campaign wants to take. I have chosen the one that I would like us to see go down. It's the one that built this country into the powerhouse that it was. Reshoring manufacturing, good union jobs, sane taxation, a government that works to make lives better as opposed to enriching billionaires. It seems very clear to me. On the other side, you've got, and we've heard Elon Musk, we've heard Donald Trump and his talk about how he likes the 1880s and 90s and the Gilded Age. We've heard him say he's going to give tax cuts to billionaires. We've heard all of this stuff. And if we ignore it's at our own peril. The thing that you can say Republicans have been, if anything, is honest in the fact that they hate this country as it is. They want to remake it into some right-wing fantasy, some bizarre utopia of some right-wing novelist, and a place that hasn't been in our lifetime. They hate what this country has become, one that is more egalitarian, one that is, well, more diverse. And the question is, what do we decide? Which direction do we go? And that's why I hope tomorrow when people go to the polls, I'm hoping there's a decision and a clear decision. My fear is that, again, we have another one of these moments where we're bickering over a handful of votes in a handful of states. And the whiner class does nothing but complain. Because understand, there's a potential of nobody being happy with the result. Or half the country hating the other half or continuing this. Look, if Donald Trump wins in a landslide, I accept that he won. I will fight the policies. We will work to ensure that you know, politicians know our and will feel our wrath if Project 2025 becomes the law of the land. And we have no reason to believe that they will not pursue what's in that document. They've been very clear that this is what they want. This is their wet dream list. This is what they are going to do. And I'm hoping that the education process has happened. I'm hoping there have been, because look, there's been enough emails and phone calls and texts and knocking on the doors and all of that. Everybody's doing it. It now comes down to us. It comes down to us deciding, what kind of a country do we want to have? Or is it just about anger? Sadly, I hear too many people, you know, I'm just angry about how things are. And their vote becoming a protest vote more than a direction vote. I hope by going to the polls, we say what kind of a country we want. What kind of an economy we want. What kind of a future we want to leave to our children. Voting is an awesome responsibility. It's an incredible responsibility. Being a citizen, a critically thinking citizen in a country, thinking about not just themselves and their narrow self-interest, but the future that they're going to leave their children. That's what this is about. Now, me as a union guy, I find Donald Trump's comment to Elon Musk, I find that reprehensible. I find it completely out of bounds and a total disqualifier. And anyone who's ever carried a union card That should be an absolute disqualifier. As the father of two daughters, the fact that Roe versus Wade is now not the law of the land and my daughters have less rights than their mother or their grandmother, that's also a disqualifier. My thoughts. I want to hear yours, though. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. You going to vote? I sure hope so. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.